Section 2. Rebuilding the Economy. As you read, look for the following. How Missouri's Economy Changed After the Civil War. How railroads played a key role in Missouri's growth. Inventions and new technology that changed the economy. Vocabulary terms: raw materials, tenements, epidemic. The 35 years after the Civil War saw tremendous changes in Missouri. During that period, the state went from a land made up mostly of small farms to being one of the country's major manufacturing states. As you learned earlier, manufacturing involves taking a natural resource, such as wood or iron, and turning it into a product, such as furniture or steel. Transportation. Railroads were just beginning to cross Missouri when the Civil War stopped much of the work. After the war, railroad construction boomed, grew rapidly. Rail lines were completed between St. Louis and Kansas City, St. Louis and Springfield, and St. Louis and Arkansas. Page 216. Rivers had been important transportation routes in the days of keelboats and steamboats, but they were obstacles, something in the way, for the railroads. Bridges had to be built over them. Important railroad bridges were built in Kansas City and at Hannibal and St. Charles. Famous bridges were built in Glasgow, the first all-steel bridge over the Missouri River, and at St. Louis. The Eads Bridge at St. Louis was the first bridge anywhere to use steel arches. It was also the first bridge over the Mississippi at St. Louis. Workers had to brave a dangerous river current and to dig 90 feet down to solid rock to anchor the piers for the bridge. Several workers died during its construction. Rail lines reached into every part of the state. Often, towns competed to have a rail line go through them. In some cases, towns moved to be near a railroad. New towns, such as Sedalia and Joplin, grew up along the railroads, especially where two lines crossed or a rail line branched out. Railroads turned a number of small towns into big cities. Springfield, for example, went from just over 3,000 residents in 1860 to nearly 22,000 in 1890 after the railroad reached it. St. Louis became an important rail center as it doubled in population from 1860 to 1870. By the end of the 19th century, it had more than a 500,000 people and was the 8th largest city in the country. Kansas City grew from a town of 500 people before the war to a city of 60,000 by 1880. On the other hand, towns that were bypassed by the railroads often became ghost towns, towns where people no longer lived. Page 217. Manufacturing and Mining. The railroads made it possible to ship raw materials to factories and mills. Raw materials are any materials that are processed to make another product. For example, trees are the raw material for wooden furniture. The railroads then carried the manufactured goods from the factories to buyers all over the country. Kansas City became famous for its large stockyards, where cattle, pigs, horses, and mules were bought and sold. Meatpacking plants were built near the stockyards, and meat was shipped around the country in refrigerated cars. Ice was used to keep the cars cold. Kansas City was also an important grain center. Wheat, corn, and oats were brought by rail from farms on the Great Plains and turned into flour, cornmeal, corn syrup, oatmeal, and other cereals. St. Louis was important for its iron mills, breweries, and clothing, furniture, and shoe factories. St. Louis also was home to leading manufacturers of streetcars, chemicals, medicine, and bricks. Smaller cities also had factories. Hannibal was famous for cigars and boats. Cotton, woolen goods, and wagons were made in Springfield. St. Joseph was known for meat packing and candy. Did you know? The first rolled process flour mill, in which metal rollers replaced millstones, in the United States was built in 1886 in Dexter by Andy Cooper and Albert Jornt. Page 218. Mining grew in importance in Missouri during this time. There were large lead mines around Bonterre and Joplin. There were limestone quarries around St. Louis and Carthage. There were coal mines in northeast and west central Missouri, and zinc and other ore mines in southwest Missouri. Clay for bricks was found near Fulton, Mexico, and Vandalia. Brick factories were built nearby. Mining was so important that the state legislature created a school of mines in Rolla, now Missouri University of Science and Technology, in 1870. Agriculture. With railroads reaching most parts of Missouri, farmers found it easier to ship their crops and livestock to market. As more land was cleared and more immigrant farmers from Europe settled in the state, the number of farms in Missouri grew. In 1860, there were 93,000 farms. In 1890, there were 238,000. New and improved machinery meant farmers could farm more land. The average size of the farms grew from 40 acres to about 130 acres. The new machinery included threshers and better plows and planters. Horses and mills still supplied most of the power, but steam-driven tractors were beginning to take over some of the work. By 1890, Missouri farmers grew 5 times more corn, 10 times more oats, and 9 times more wheat than they had in 1866. Other important crops were cotton in the Boot Hill, tobacco and hemp along the Missouri River, and grapes and fruit trees in the Ozarks and along the Missouri River. Page 219. Farmers began to receive expert help from the College of Agriculture at the University of Missouri in Columbia and from the State Board of Agriculture. Experts at the college and state board exchanged or traded information and ideas. They shared their knowledge at county fairs and in the many magazines and weekly newspapers written for farmers and their families. Lumbering and sawmills were important in southern Missouri. Lumberjacks, those whose job it is to cut and prepare lumber, built railroads into the pine forest, set up sawmills, and cut down all the trees they could find. They then tore up the tracks, tore down the sawmill, and moved to the next forest. By the end of the 19th century, most of the state's forest had been cut. Most of the lumber companies had moved on to other states. Telephones and electricity. We take for granted that we will have lights in the dark, and that we can call our friends on the telephone whenever we please. But just over a century ago, electric lights and telephones were still rare in Missouri and enjoyed by only a few. In the years after the Civil War, Most families still relied on candles, lanterns, or kerosene lamps for light. Farm families often went to bed early. Zzz! Farm families often went to bed shortly after sundown and awoke before dawn. In that way, they were able to start work as soon as the sun was up. City dwellers used candles and kerosene lamps in homes, but many houses, businesses, and factories had gas lights. The natural gas was found underground in wells or produced by heating coal. It was piped into homes and other buildings. Gas was also used to light street lamps. Men called lamp lighters went around at dusk to light the lamps and then turned them off at dawn. Page 220. Electricity was only beginning to be used. Before 1890, few houses or buildings were wired for electricity or connected to an electric line. Electric lights and appliances were rare. Telephones were more common. The first long-distance call made from Missouri was placed in Cape Girardeau in 1877. Hannibal became the first city in Missouri to have a telephone exchange, a network of wires connecting homes and businesses. By 1885, telephone lines linked Kansas City to St. Louis. By 1890, most large cities and many small towns in Missouri were linked by telephone. City life. For young boys and girls on the farm, life in the city seemed glamorous and exciting compared to their lives of getting up early, doing chores, going to school, and going to bed early. But life in the city for children was often hard and dangerous. The cities were crowded as more and more people moved from the farms or immigrants from other countries came to America. Only the wealthier people had houses. Most families lived in buildings called tenements. Tenements are like apartment buildings, but they usually only had three or four families in each building. The tenements were three or four stories high, sometimes higher, with one family living on top of another. Each family had perhaps a kitchen, a living room, and a couple of bedrooms. All of the families might share one bathroom in the building. However, many of the buildings did not have indoor plumbing. The buildings were very close to one another and right next to the street. The children played on the sidewalks or in the streets. The streets could be dangerous because they were filled with horse-drawn wagons and coaches. Page 221. Most children went to school. When they were old enough to work, many quit and joined their fathers, brothers, and sometimes mothers and sisters in the factories. They often did dangerous jobs, and some were injured or killed by the machinery. The children worked as many as 12 hours a day, 6 days a week, sometimes for as little as 25 cents a day. In winter, the factories were damp and cold. In the summer, they were hot and sweaty. They were always noisy. The air was often filled with lint, dust, or smoke. Because so many factories burned coal for power or heat, and many homes did as well, the air in the cities was dirty and unhealthy. Because people lived and worked so close together, when someone became ill, the illness soon spread in an epidemic to many other people in the community. There were none of the modern medicines we have today. Many people, including many children, died from diseases that are easily cured or prevented today. But there were fun times, too. Families rode the horse-drawn streetcars or walked to the city parks on Sundays. Some took buggy rides into the countryside to see the farms and have picnics. There were sports to watch, games to play, and theaters and libraries to visit. Life could be colorful with so many immigrants speaking the different languages of their homelands. Markets were filled with many kinds of fruits and vegetables. In the cities, department stores replaced general stores. Department stores were filled with all kinds of goods. People selling nuts or collecting old rags went up and down the street, yelling or singing to attract customers. Did you know? A cholera epidemic caused by unsanitary conditions and polluted drinking water killed 3,527 people in St. Louis in the summer of 1866. Do you remember? Number 1. Why would a town want a railroad to run through or by it? Number 2. What was a lamp lighter? Number 3. Why did some epidemics take place in the cities after the Civil War? Page 222. Missouri Places. Watkins Woolen Mill. These days, we wear clothes made from a wide variety of natural and man-made materials. But in the mid and late 1800s, where you lived determined to a large extent how your clothes were made. For instance, if you lived in the South, where cotton was grown, much of your clothing was made of cotton cloth. This was good because cotton is better suited for the warmer climate of the South. But in much of Missouri, the growing season is not hot enough, long enough, to grow cotton. The weather, though, is very good for raising sheep. Many farmers in the 19th century had flocks of sheep on their farms. They would shear, cut, the wool from the sheep and take it to a woolen mill. There it was turned into yarn or cloth. Some of the cloth went to factories and was turned into clothing, but much of it was sold to families who made their own clothes. Most of the clothes worn by Missourians during this time were made of wool. Before there were mills, the women of a farm family used to process the wool themselves. It was long and tedious work. Just before the Civil War, however, machines were invented that could do the work faster and in greater quantities. That made it cheaper for farmers to take their wool to a mill for processing. The farm family could sell their wool to the mill and earn enough money to buy yarn and cloth to make their own clothes or to buy factory-made clothes at the store. At one time, there were more than 2,400 small woolen mills in the United States, serving farmers and the towns around them. As larger factories were built and transportation became better, the small woolen mills could not compete and went out of business. Today there is only one woolen mill left that you can visit to see the original equipment and to learn how wool was turned into yarn and cloth. That mill is at the Watkins Woolen Mill State Park near Liberty. Page 223. Waltus Watkins, a Kentucky native, built a plantation north of Liberty called Bethany. Along with his house and barn and other farm buildings, he also built a church, a school, and a woolen mill. The mill was built around 1860 and operated until 1898. A grist mill for grinding grain operated in the lower level until 1905. When the sons of Waltus Watkins closed the mill, they simply locked the doors and left it just as their late father had built it. That is what makes the mill so special. When other woolen mills closed, they were either torn down, had their equipment removed, or were turned into some other type of factory. So Watkins Woolen Mill is the only place where you can see what a 19th century woolen mill looked like and how it worked. That is one reason it was designated a National Historic Landmark in 1966, 2 years after the mill and the other buildings on the plantation became a state park. You can tour the buildings and the museum. At the mill, you can see where the wool was cleaned and dyed and formed into mats. You can see the picking machines, which turned the mats of wool into small, fluffy pieces. Those were placed on the carding machines to be pulled into fibers and long strands that were then spun into yarn or placed on the looms to be made into cloth. After your tour, you and your family can enjoy a picnic in the park. If it's a cool day and you're wearing a wool sweater, you might stop and think about how it would have been made back in the days when the Watkins Woolen Mill was in operation. Page 224, Chapter Review. Summary. After the Civil War, Missouri had to rebuild, not only things destroyed by war, but also the state's government. A new constitution in many ways helped with Reconstruction, but it also punished those who had supported the Confederacy and did not go far enough to help the newly freed slaves. This chapter told about the hardships faced by the freedmen, the lack of jobs, housing, and educational opportunities. Changes in transportation, especially the expansion of the railroads, helped both agriculture and manufacturing, and led to the growth of the state and some of its cities. Other advances in technology made Missouri farmers more productive. You also learned how the telephone and electricity became more widespread in Missouri. During this time, the state invested more money in education and the training of teachers. A better educated population was able to pursue more cultural pastimes. Missouri was home to several prominent authors, poets, and painters during this time. Remember, make flashcards for the following vocabulary words. Practice with a classmate or a family member. Number 1, discrimination. Number 2, epidemic. Number 3, freedmen. Number 4, freedmen's bureau. Number 5, racism. Number 6, raw materials. Number 7, reconstruction. Number 8, segregation. Number 9, suffrage. Number 10, tenant farmer. Number 11, tenements. Number 12, test oath. Page 225. Understand. Use complete sentences to answer the following questions. Number 1. Who were the radicals? What was the first thing they did after they were elected to office? Number 2. How did African Americans in Missouri help themselves after the Civil War? Number 3. What right did the 15th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution guarantee? Number 4. Why did many African Americans leave Missouri after the Civil War? Number 5. Why were railroads important to the growth of Missouri? Number 6. What improvements were made in farm machinery in the late 1800s? Number 7. Why was air in cities dirty and unhealthy in the 1890s? Think about it. Number 1. How did segregation continue to separate people after the Civil War? Is there evidence of segregation in your community today? Number 2. Compare life in the city to that on the farm after the Civil War. Write about it. Number 1. In a short paragraph, describe what life was like for the freedmen after the Civil War. Number 2. Research and write a short report on one of the following important Missourians: George Caleb Bingham, artist; Samuel Clemens, Mark Twain, writer; or Eugene Field, writer and poet. Use the Internet. Number 1. Visit the Museum of Transportation's website at www.umseumoftransport.org. To learn more about early transportation in Missouri, make a list of 5 interesting facts to share with your classmates. Number 2. Learn more about mining in Missouri by visiting www.momic.com. Make a list of minerals that are mined in Missouri. Work together. Number 1. With a partner or in a small group, create a diorama or poster showing what life may have been like before the invention of electricity. Number 2. Communication changed in the 1890s in Missouri. With a partner, research and create a display that shows these changes. Include headings, pictures, and captions. Replace. Use the Internet. Number 1. Visit the Museum of Transportation's website at www.museumoftransport.org to learn more about early transportation in Missouri. Make a list of 5 interesting facts to share with your classmates. Number 2. Learn more about mining in Missouri by visiting www.momic.com. Make a list of minerals that are mined in Missouri.